Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, on this beautiful, sunny, cool day. It's lovely outside, and I have a phenomenal guest and a phenomenal show for you today. But before we start, I would like to send my condolences and heartfelt wishes to the people in Las Vegas and to those who lost people in their family. I hope that you stay strong and know that we're all here for you. And for those 527 people that were injured, may God watch over you and your family, and may it never happen again. I would like to introduce our guest. I have the author of, well, it's going to be one of my picks for the month of September and October, Proof of Life. Before he retired, J.P. Bowman had looked forward to having his days to himself and spending quality time with his busy wife, Mel Billingham, chief of police, and two grown children. But too much free time doesn't suit a man used to brushing close to danger, but wants to do something useful. A wish that is soon fulfilled in spades. I'm not going to tell you anymore. I'm going to let J.A. Jance tell you. Good morning. How are you? And I'm so excited that you're here.
Good morning to you, and I'm glad to be here, too.
Well,
it's early here because
I'm
on the West Coast.
You know what? I didn't know. I never know where anybody's calling in from. It's 10 o'clock here. What time is it there?
It's 7.
Oh my God! You know, she should have told me. She would have told me. I would have done the show at 11. I've done shows.
Well, that would have been a lot better for me.
Yeah, you know, she didn't. She didn't ask me that. If I would have known, I'll know that for next time to do 11, because that's probably the latest I could do something. I'm sorry. I did a show with an author from Japan, and I did it at 8 o'clock in the morning because it was 9 o'clock his time, and I go like it's before I get up, but that's okay. So the main character of your book is someone that I really enjoyed reading about because he was good, he had flaws, but he was really into what he was doing. So tell us about J.P. Bowman and why he becomes involved in solving so many different cases after retiring from the police force.
Well, what I need to tell you is that Bo and I have been together as author and character since the middle of March of 1983. I had been trying to write a book for about 6 months, and I couldn't get the book to come into focus. And so I was a single parent at that point. I sent my kids to camp for spring break, and I got on the train to go from Seattle to Portland to visit a friend from my days in the life insurance business. And I got on the train with a stack of Blue Line notebooks and a fistful of pens. And as the train pulled out of the station, I thought, well, what would happen if I wrote this? And I wrote the words, she might have been a month, hard to tell now. She was dead. And as soon as I wrote those words, I was with J.P. Bowman at a crime scene, walking the crime scene with him, seeing it through his eyes, hearing what he was saying, and also hearing what he was thinking. And we've been together like that ever since. I write other books. I have 3 other series that I write with other characters. But when I start to write a Bowman book, it only takes a few pages before I'm back inside his frame of reference. And that happened in this book. By the time he took the phone call from his son saying, come help me, come help with my my dental appointment.
Well, he is really he's a really good character. He became one of my favorite characters because I've read so many books. I read in the thousands by now, and each protagonist is so different. But he was somebody that caught my interest right away. And I have to admire him because his wife, we're going to talk about her, is chief of police. And he doesn't resent the fact that she's chief of police at all. And that's what really made me admire him even more. So how does he feel about her, you know, being in charge of a huge police force? And she's really good, by the way, people. She knows what she's doing.
The thing about Bo and Mel is they started out as partners in the Special Homicide Investigation Team. And that was a special group run by the Washington State Attorney General. And when the Attorney General died as a result of a tragic car accident, that organization was dissolved. And so after Special Homicide went away, that was when Mel took the job as chief of police in Bellingham.
And the chief of police, you know, she gets called away a lot too, and put in danger. So how does he feel about that?
Well, over decades of writing books about him, his idea about what happened about men and women and how they function together in law enforcement has changed remarkably. One of his first female partners was Sue Danielson, and she dies tragically in Beaumont number 14, breach of duty. And so he understood. Mel was a cop, he was a cop, and they both give each other space based on that aspect of their relationship.
That is amazing, because so many husbands and wife pairs in books can't work together. So let's get to the guy that was killed. And he was an interesting guy. So in the book, Max Cole and gets killed. How come? I mean, how does he die? And the third question I have was, in the book, Max Cole and Bo are frenemies. Could you explain their past? And tell us a little bit about Max Cole.
Maxwell Cole and Bo have had a tumultuous relationship from college on. They were fraternity brothers at the University of Washington. And Max showed up with Karen Moffett at one of their formals and left with Bo. And Karen and Bo ended up getting married. So they've never been friends. Max became a newspaper reporter and then a self-styled crime columnist. And he's been taking whacks in public at J.P. Beaumont for as long as Bo has been a cop. So the idea that Max would ask for Bo's help is sort of surprising.
Even though they were basically didn't like each other at all, so he was kind of surprised. So he dies in what's officially, I'm looking at the cover of the book, an accidental fire. So he's astonished to be requested to solve this case. And he's on opposite sides of the homicide coin, and there's been bad blood with him for 2 years. So how does he get dragged in, and who asks him to investigate why he was killed?
Well, the person who asks him is a young, a no longer young woman, a woman named Erin Kelsey. And she's someone who is also out of Bo's past. Her mother and another woman were murdered in the school district office in payment in kind, Beaumont number 9. And that case was when Bo got an inkling that there was stuff in Maxwell Cole's life that didn't quite add up. But Max was close friends with Erin's family. And when her family got blown apart, Erin and Max stayed in touch. And Erin is the one who reaches out to Bo and lets him know that Max thought he was afraid that he was in danger, and that if anything happened to him, he was hoping that Bo would agree to investigate it.
Well, he didn't seem to that he really wanted to, but yet he felt that he had to. He felt in his own heart that he had to do it. And it was interesting how he goes about it. But you used a term that's really cool in this book. In this book, you call them frenemies. What do you mean by that? I don't think most people would know. That's a really cool term.
Well, they started out as friends and fraternity brothers and stayed in each other's orbit, but were sort of on opposite sides of the fence, with Bo being in law enforcement and Max sitting on the sidelines taking cracks at him whenever possible.
Yeah, I know that. I read that part and I'm saying, like, oh my God, you know, he sort of like brought a blindside him and what he's doing. So, tell us about Rambo and how she comes into the picture. It's my favorite character. Sorry, I just, you know, I said that was just so cool, and I like the dog. Sorry.
Well, the Rambo. If you look at Rambo, you will. Rambo looks a lot like my grand dog Storm. Storm was a 20-pound starving mutt when my daughter adopted her, and she's now probably 110 pounds of mutt. Lots of Irish Wolfhound, lots of long fur, but mostly very black. And the part about black dogs not being adopted is actually true. And so on the one hand, Rambo is based on Storm, but on the other hand, Rambo is based on a rescue that came into our lives in the early late 80s and early 90s, and he was from a pound, and when I was housebreaking him, Boney was small enough that I could carry him in one hand, but he also grew, turned out to be half German Shepherd and half Irish Wolfhound. And when we traveled in the car, he traveled just the way Rambo did, with Boney's head on my husband's shoulder, dribbling into his pocket. And people really would almost wreck the car going past us because his head was big enough that it completely obscured my husband's head, and it always looked like a dog was driving the car.
My brother has a pit bull, boxer pit bull, and Bella, but call it Bella, and she sort of owns the house too. She takes over, and she's a rescue dog. She's amazing, and this Rambo is just like my favorite character. So how did you create the priceless scenes with this dog? Because he seems to take over, and he seems to be running everybody's life. You just know he's there. Actually,
I have no idea
actually,
how I did that.
Yeah, she's a girl. She's a girl. I like the name Rambo because she reminds me of a Rambo, but she's a girl, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I like the scene where you discover that she isn't Rambo at all, and all of the assumptions Bo had made about this dog were actually wrong.
That is true. Well, I don't want to give away too much about that. But I'm looking at my phone to see which of the questions from before that I'm not going to answer. The title of the book, Proof of Life, what would you say the definition of that is? I'm going to get the...
Of course, on the one hand, it refers to Charisse's sonogram, where that shows that she is expecting a baby. That's one form of proof of life. But at the end of the book, Bo has decided that his life isn't over, and he's finding a way to move forward in retirement, still doing what he's always loved.
That is true, and there's a lot of definitions of that particular title. We have another few characters that if you want to talk about. Number one. Besides the meaning of the title, there are other people. He has connections to the force, even though he's not a police officer. How come when he asks for help, does he get it from different people in the force anyway?
Well, because he worked for Seattle PD for a long time before he went to Special Homicide. He went to Special Homicide after he had been at Seattle PD for a whole career's worth. So he has all of those connections. Benjamin Weston, the gang unit undercover guy, is someone we meet as a little kid in a book called Without Due Process. So he and Ron Peters, his original partner, is now the assistant chief of police. So he has these long-term connections and friendships inside the department, and he can call on them, and does.
I have the book in front of me, like I said, and it's up to you. Can you tell us what happened when Max was in the bar and then he went into the parking lot? Because that pretty cool is what happens to him and how he dies.
That I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
That would be too much.
I just
want to
make sure that I got that one right. I crossed it out before, but I don't want to tell anybody. And I didn't mention the person that he met. I'm
right.
Really good at that.
No, I think we'll... They'll have to read the book to find out what happens in the parking lot of the bar.
Yeah, I'm not gonna answer that one. Is there anybody else in the book before I go to the more generic questions and others that you want to talk about? Because there are a few other characters that I can mention, and you can decide if you want to talk about them or not. Because they were in my original questions, and one was Todd Michael Faraday. Do you want to talk about him at all, or tell anybody who he is and his relationship to this case?
Todd Michael Faraday is someone you also meet in the course of Payment in Kind. So he's.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron and Todd and this whole bunch of people are people Bo encountered in that book. And so he's someone that was a spoiled brat kid when Bo met him years earlier, and his life has been a tragedy. He's never recovered from his upbringing, and I think that's all I want to say about Todd.
Okay.
Poor baby.
I know. I'm going to have to read the book that came before this, because so I can get to know these characters even better, and definitely whatever comes next, I hope I get it first. I love reading books before they come out. I for those of you that want to know what to read that didn't come out yet, November 14th, you want to read Endgame by David Baldacci. Without a doubt, you don't want to miss that one. And I'm hoping that I get the next Harlan Coben one, and then a few others that I put my, you know, two cents in that I want to read. There's another character in here. I've got this book memorized too, and he's related to Todd Faraday, and that would be Lawrence Hardin. What about him? Do you want to talk about him? And then I'm going to go to the more generic questions, so we steer ourselves away before we give anything away.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question.
Can you tell us about, there are two characters, Detective Blaylock, he was one of my favorite characters, and the other one is Lawrence Hardin. Do you want to talk about anything, why Max
Detective
met with Detective, yeah, I like him.
Detective Blaylock is an outsider, and
mm-hmm.
he, in an effort to, fit in. He makes one of the 10 fatal errors that police officers make and goes lone rangering it. And lone rangering is a bad idea. Years ago, I read a book by a former L.A. police officer named Pierce Brooks. And the book is called Officer Down, Code 3. And that book lays out those 10 fatal errors and how they happen. And that's what happens to Kevin Blaylock.
Mm. Now, Bo is great because he doesn't stick to the rules all the time. And he sometimes, as
right.
he says on the blurb in the book, he goes outside the law, my kind of person, doing things his way. How does he do that, and how does he get away with that? Because that's really what I really admired about him, is that if he wants to find out something, he just goes about and does it, and he doesn't care what he has to do to find out. So how did you make it where he's sort of like a great cop, whatever, consultant, and yet he's sort of like a rogue, and he plays it by his own rules. How did you create that? Because that is great.
Part of that comes from the fact that he is no longer a police officer, so he's no longer bound by all of the rules and regulations that police officers have to go by, and so he can go around and over obstacles, like getting the guy from the bomb squad to take him into the crime scene. He had no business being in that crime scene.
Mm. How does he?
But he got there
because
he knew that guy.
That's exactly it. He's got the pull. He also has the pull because his wife is chief of police. And I'm not going to say how they work together, but I really got a kick out of the fact that she could hold her own, which is what I admired. Instead of making the female police chief like helpless or whatever and everybody taken over, I really like the female character that she can hold her own and deal with criminals on her own without his help. That's what I really admired about it, and that's a strong character. Even though he was working with her, she sort of knows how to take charge, which I thought was great. So how did you create that part? Because she's great. I like her.
Well, the thing is that relationship developed over the course of 7 or 8 books. Once they had been in a couple of life and death situations with each other's back, they developed a real form of trust long before that turned into a romance. And I think that's part of what makes their relationship unique in crime fiction. They're equals.
Yeah, they're great. And what the point of the matter is that they don't resent each other, and there's no like, oh, she's better than me or something like that. They just seem to be so compatible. I'm sorry, I didn't read the other 7 books. I'm gonna have to catch up on this seriously, because I've seen your books, and and I didn't know who to ask. You know, to get one, and I'm saying I was going to walk up to you at the Phila Fest and say, can I please have a book? I did that to Carter Wilson, and I did get one.
I think for people who are totally unfamiliar with my work, a good place to start would be Until Proven Guilty, which is the first Beaumont book. That's 23 books ago. And that, in that book, you see Bo and his rivalry with Maxwell Cole at the very beginning. You see Bo involved in a love story that goes bad. You see the basis of his long-term friendship with Ron Peters. When at the beginning, he and Ron are sort of polar opposites. They're working together, but not happily so. And yet by the end of that book, you see Ron Peters do something in the aftermath of a tragedy that makes you know that he and Bo are going to be friends from then on.
I picked that up in the book, this one too. It's just that I knew that this was a series. And I never knew this character. And I picked up your book, and seriously, this is a compliment, by the way. I got eye strain. The minute I picked up your book, I couldn't put it down. And that happens not to, seriously. I just sat down and read it. And Julie sent it, and I emailed her. I said, okay, I just got the book. And then the next day, I read the book. And I said, can I get an interview? I don't do that too often. But I sat down, oh, my God, this is great. My eyes are killing me. It must be a great book. And that's a compliment to the fact that I actually couldn't put it down. And like I said before the show, there are about 10 people that want copies of this. Go on Amazon and figure out how to get one for yourself, because this one stays with me. So let me
ask you a question then, Jack. Sure. You came to Proof of Life, the 23rd book in this series, as someone who had not ever read any of my books, and yet you felt totally at home in this story, didn't you?
Yes, I did, and I felt like I was in the story because your writing is so fantastic, and I don't always often say this to authors, but I felt like I was there with J.P. Beaumont because he was telling me the story, and the reader's going to feel as if he's telling it to you. And each of the scenes, no matter who it was, I just felt like I was there. And the descriptions of what happened were so perfectly written that I'm saying, okay, I can't wait to see what happened next. I can't wait to see what happened. I can't wait to see who the person was that killed him. And he was not the nicest person in the world, but no one deserves to die, as we know from the news. So, yeah, I felt right at home with this story. And I'm going to feel right at home with more of your stories, I hope.
Well,
I think you don't get that way all the time, seriously.
I think a lot of times people are worried about coming into a series several books in. And what I try to do, writing a new book in any series is very much like walking a tightrope, because I have to put in enough of the history that new readers feel at home, without putting in so much of the history that regular readers are bored. So it's challenging to get just the right mix there, but it sounds as though I made it work for you.
You made it perfect for me. To be very honest, I've read just about every New York Times author that was at that Phila Fest, and I read your book first. And T. Jefferson Parker's book, everybody, The Room with the White Fire, I wish I could get an interview with him. That book was absolutely outrageous. It was fantastic, about mental institutions and mental abuse and what they do to patients. And I happen to know from my niece's real-life experience that what he's writing about in the book could really happen. So, I mean, I was scary at home with that one, but I was more at home with this one. So when you create your novel, how do you decide on the murder, the person that's going to get murdered, and who's the villain and the weapon?
Since I write murder mysteries, I usually start with the person who's dead first. And in this case, Maxwell Cole's time was up. I can't explain to you how I decided that. I just know that I did. And then I don't write outlines. I'm not someone who believes in doing outlines. So I spend the rest of the book trying to figure out who did it and how come.
That's hard.
By the time I get to 100,000 words, I need to have figured it out.
So you just do what other people do. You just sit and write, which is great. And you just put the words on the paper, and then the character is going to tell. Does the character tell you what he wants you to do or not do? Does he give you permission to kill somebody specific?
Pretty much, yes.
So that's good. At least, you know, JP has. How would you describe him as a person? What would you say his character traits are?
He is a man who is learning to deal with his history. In the early books, he drank too much. He went into treatment, and he has a blackout in book number 7. Goes into treatment in book number 8. And so he's dealing with his past history, and that's part of what's going on with him and Scott at the beginning of this book. He was working as a cop, and the kids were living in the suburbs. He would work long hours and then drink on the way home. And so when Scotty was growing up, he was a mostly absent father. And so when Scott was little and lost his first tooth by biting into a burrito and swallowing the tooth along with the burrito, Beaumont was at work when that happened, and he wasn't part of that crisis. And so when Scott asks him, would you help me with this dental appointment, Bo sees it as a way to make amends for what he missed out doing when Scotty was little.
That is interesting. Now, I don't think a lot of people would understand it. A lot of people would understand that.
I think one of the advantages of writing a series is you can work in those pieces of the tapestry in a way that they make a complete picture of a person instead of being just a couple of words on the page.
That is true. And you know what the hard part is, too, because I can't even tell you how many books in the series I've read by a whole bunch of different authors. And to keep reader interest after all those books is not easy, which I'm sure you don't have the problem of that at all, that you definitely keep reader interest with everything that you're writing. I mean, here I read one book, and I couldn't put it down. And that's hard. How do you keep everybody wanting to come back for J.P. Beaumont even more? Because I could see where millions of people are going to want to know more. What is he going to do? And he's a great character. So how do you keep reader interest? I've asked that of Steve Berry because his Cotton Malone is fantastic. Or John Land, his my favorite is Caitlin Strong, but he knows I have a different favorite. and even Alan Topol, his Craig Page. How do you keep them? How do you keep people wanting to come back and read J.P. Bowman and changing it up every single time?
I think the way I do that is by not always writing about J.P. Bowman. If I had only been writing about him, he would have been gone a long time ago. But because I have other series and other characters and other locales that I can use in between, when I come back to him or to one of the other characters, I'm fresh again. And I think that helps me maintain my interest, and I think that helps maintain the reader's interest as well.
Without a doubt. And Russ, just to let you know that I did do some research to find out about your other series, because I didn't want to give away too much about this. For those of you, Proof of Life is a must read. It's on my picks for last month, by the way, on my Facebook wall. And everybody reads what I write. I have to tell you, they do. Everybody reads everything I write and they comment. And we have a few people that are listening also. We have Marcia Casper Cook, the host of A Good Story is a Good Story, is listening online. And we have Bruce Coffin that is listening, and Tom Fuchel and Tom Williams. And there's a whole bunch of authors that are listening in, and they're going to listen later to the show. Just want you to know. Everybody reads whatever I write. And, look at that. Marilyn Levinson is listening. Also, Monica Brinkman and a whole bunch of other people. That's pretty good.
That's wonderful news. I'm glad. Hello. Everybody.
Hello to everyone, too. And these are all authors whose books I've reviewed or tried to know and review them. Writing mysteries is different from writing anything else, but I do know that besides the Beaumont series, you have the Joanna Brady series, who is a former Los Angeles news anchor, mystery solver, Allie Reynolds. Tell us more about that series and how come I didn't read it yet.
Well, Joanna Brady is a sheriff in southeastern Arizona, where I grew up. I had been writing Beaumont books for a long time when I had lived in Seattle for less than 2 years, and Bo was a Seattle native. So I thought, well, why don't I write something where I know the territory? So I created Joanna Brady. The Walker books are set on the Tohono O'odham Indian Reservation west of Tucson, where I was a K-12 librarian for a number of years. And the Allie Reynolds books. Allie was a news broadcaster in L.A. before she aged out. Her at the beginning of Edge of Evil, she's been pulled off the air by her 35-year-old news director because she's too old to be on TV. And that series grew out of a television station in Tucson, yanking my favorite newscaster, Patty Weiss, off the air because she hit age 53 and they decided she was too old. So all of these books have grown out of all of these characters have series with several books in them. There are 5 Walker books. There are 18 Joanna Brady books. There are, I'm working on Allie Reynolds number 13, and this is Beaumont number 23. So you can see I've been sharing the wealth for a long time.
Well, if you said it's coming out in December, I'm going to have to tell Julia. You're going to have to tell Julia. Fran wants a copy of the book, definitely. So I could add it to my list of 55 books inside that I have to read. But you know what happens when I got your book? There was a stack. I never have less than 25 or 30 books that are staring at me, and I could read like 5 or 6 a week. And I looked at this book, and I'm going, okay, let me look at the blurb. Okay. Then, I started to read it, and I said, oh, well, everybody else has to wait. And there were people whose books I had to actually read right away, which I did after I read yours. No, I'm serious. I did. I said, you know what? This is too good for me to have to wait to read it. But before I forget, next Tuesday, Marilyn Levinson, a.k.a. Allison Brooke, will be here with Death Overdue, proving why going to the library could be deadly. Seriously. On October 12th, this is a different genre for me. It's a self-help book. It's called Oola for Women, How to Be Awesome. And I'm excited. On the 19th, Barry Kerwin will be here, 37 hours. He's fantastic. October 30th, Carlin Eggers is going to be here with her new release. And on 11-1, Lynn and Valerie Constantine, The Last Mrs. Parrish. That was great. And David McAuliffe with Reload on November 2nd. That's just some of the mischief that I'm going to be in. And I mustn't forget on 11-9, I've got a panel show with D.P. Lyle. We're going to talk about how to you presented your case or your murder case, and you presented it exactly right. There are some authors that are brand new novelists that have no clue. So when they present the case to court, or they the police take over, then the FBI take over, as you're reading in the news, or they present forensic evidence, they do it all wrong. So they're going to set everybody straight on November 9th at 10 o'clock in the morning. So when writing your first novel and creating the plot, how did you feel when you first saw it in print?
On the first book that was published, Until Proven Guilty, was an original paperback. And, excuse me, my first author copy arrived on a day when I was taking my Girl Scout troop to Victoria, Canada, on the Queen Mary as a reward for selling lots of Girl Scout cookies. And so the book came, and I had it in my purse, and for a lot of the time we were on the boat, I read my own book. It was wonderful.
Mm. That is exciting. I know I wrote my first book in 2007. It's called My Name is Bertha, and it was about my sister and our antics growing up in the South Bronx. And that was really fun. But, you know, just seeing your name in print or seeing a picture on the back cover of the book, and it was a good book. It's okay. It's not, the quality of the writers who I interview. But, yeah, it was exciting. So what are the basic things that every new writer needs to learn?
I need to tell you about that book. They didn't put my author bio on it, and they didn't put my picture on it.
Oh, God.
Because
oh, gosh.
The marketing people said male readers are not going to accept a police procedural written by somebody named Judy, and that's where the pen name J.A. Jans came from, as opposed to Judith Ann.
That is sad. I know. I just read a book. I won't say which one. I read it yesterday, actually. I read the whole book in like an hour. It was like only 300 pages, and it wasn't really that bad. And they put the author's bio in, but they didn't put any accolades. And I found that when you write a book or that you're writing a new novel, that people want to know what they think about your past novels or about that series, which is in your press release. So I got to know more about your character. Whereas in this particular case, the author asked me to write a press release. I did one yesterday. Actually, it came out great. And I waited till I read the book so that I could write something positive about, the book on her press release. And then I looked it up on Amazon, and I found that she had two reviews on another book. Because basically, you're right. You need to put the author's bio. You need to put the information as to why the author became an author. And anything else in the past. And if people read my bios, it's like 9 miles long about all the things that I've done. But, yeah, you're right. And that's why different publishing companies, well, you're with Harper, and that's a great company, isn't it, HarperCollins?
Yes, but I was originally with Avon Books. Avon is where I started out. And Avon eventually got pulled into Avon and Morrow ended up being blended in with HarperCollins. So three of my series are with them. The Allie Reynolds books are with Simon & Schuster.
Mm. So now I have to find somebody else to ask about for that. And that would be Joe. Julie wouldn't be able to get those. So what are the basic things that every new writer needs to experience when they're writing a novel? I mean, how do you just sit down and decide to write something? That's hard. That's hard because anybody that's ever written something, you have to come up with your idea first, like you said before. So what are some of the things that they need to be aware of, besides the fact that they need to get a book edited the right way?
Well, when I bought my first computer in 1983, the guy who sold it to me fixed it so that every morning when I booted the computer up, and I booted it up at 4 o'clock in the morning every day because as a single parent with a full-time job, 4 o'clock until 7 o'clock in the morning before I got the kids up and ready to go to school and me ready to go to work, that was the only time I had to write. But David Brim, who sold me the computer, fixed it so that whenever I booted up the computer, the words that flashed across the screen were these: a writer is someone who has written today.
Mm-hmm.
And those were words that really encouraged me at a time when I believed I was a writer and nobody else believed I was a writer.
So you need to have faith in yourself. And that's so true. That is so true. In so many professions, there are so many people that make you feel as if you don't want to do it, and yet you can't let them bring you down. You have to know in your own heart that this is who you are and this is what you want to be. That I do know from personal experience of being an educator for 36 years in an inner-city school, and I said, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. And I'm saying, you know what, I'm going to do it, and I obviously did a great job because my students are on Facebook, and they're constantly telling me, because of me, they like to read books or that they became more than they thought they could be. So you have to have faith. So where and how did you get your inspiration for the different murders in your different novels? How do you figure out how someone's going to die? Because that's hard, you know, to figure out.
That's something that I sort out along the way. I don't start out with a grand scheme. A lot of times when I start writing a book, I don't know who the killer is. And I find out who the killer is and how it happened by writing, the same way my readers find out by reading. I know that sounds weird, but that's how I do it.
Well, I could tell you what. You kept me in suspense. And I just texted Julie because she just said she's glad that this is turning out great. And I just said, make sure Fran gets the next one. That's for sure. It's hard to, you know, to decide who's going to get what or who's going to be killed off or whatever, but you kept me in suspense till the end of the book, so I didn't figure it out. Most of the time I do figure it out.
Well, if people haven't read any of my books and are looking for a place to start, I prefer them to start at the beginning. Proof of Life, they can start at the end with Proof of Life. But a really good one to start with would be a book called Second Watch. And that is a book that is, it was the 21st Beaumont book, but it is also a prequel. And you find out about Beau's history, but you also meet a real live person, a real person from my past, a guy who was the valedictorian of Bisbee High School in 1961 and who died in Vietnam in 1966. And I have Beau interacting with that person as commanding officer in Vietnam, and that's really a good one to start on too, if people are wondering where to start.
I agree. That sounds like something I should start to read too. That is, oh my gosh, I could see I'm going to be addicted to this character, that's for sure, without a doubt. So we have a few more minutes. If J.P. Beaumont could pick his next case and setting, what would it be?
Well, I'm getting another inkling from his past, and
oh, good.
That's one of the advantages of living. Beau and I are exactly the same age. The way I remember his birthday is I gave him my birthday.
Oh,
so,
okay.
It turns out we're both turning 73 this month. And one of the advantages of getting older is having a chance to live long enough to see how things turn out. And see things that you didn't expect to work, and things that you thought were going to be fine, not be fine. And I think this is something, the case I'm thinking of is somebody that everybody thought was going to be a disaster, and it turns out it hasn't mm-hmm. been.
Well, I can't wait to read it, because you're going to come out with it in December, you said, your new one, the next one?
No. I'm working on the next Allie Reynolds book, but that won't be out until next spring.
Oh, that's too bad. So,
you're right. I have a paperback mm-hmm. Allie Reynolds coming out in December, and that's called Man Overboard.
And is that with Simon & Schuster, or is that with HarperCollins?
No, that's with Simon & Schuster.
And I have to figure out who to ask now. That's the
hard
part. I have a lot of contact with Simon & Schuster, but they don't. Which one is your publicist that I ask for that?
Jessica Roth.
I know who that is. Oh, good. Now I know who to ask. And she's terrific, and she will send. I know that. She's amazing. I like her. Because I definitely have to read it. So before we end, where can everybody learn more about you, your series, and everything else that's coming out? And I'll put this on my schedule, December, and that you're coming out with a new book. And
well,
I have a
website, jajans.com. I post a blog every Friday morning, which is sort of a window on my world. And if you want to go back, the first blog I wrote was when we lost our son-in-law to mm-hmm. melanoma, and that at that point our grandson was 9 months old and he's about to turn 12. So I've been blogging for about 10 years. So if people want to, they can go into the archives and read my autobiography in weekly installments for the past 10 years.
And that's probably how I found out some information about your books and everything like that. So this is really interesting. And first thing I'm going to do, which is on my little phone over here, is contact Jessica to make sure that I get the next book, because I want to learn more about this next series. Because I want to see if I can. Would you ever have Allie Reynolds and Joanna Brady meet with J.P. Beaumont and connect them in one series together?
Well, Joanna Brady and Allie have already met in two different novellas, but to have them meet up in a book has not been really possible because they belong to separate publishers, but J.P. Beaumont and Joanna Brady have met up in two separate books, Partner mm-hmm. in Crime and also in Fire and Ice.
Yeah, that was my other last question. They have that Fire and Ice and Partners in Crime. I have that. I looked that up. That was one of my other questions. So I want to thank you so much. This has been really great. And I just hope I get to do another interview with you for the other series, because this was fun. And whenever J.P. Beaumont comes out again, make sure Julie sends me this, because I definitely want to read it. And for those of you that want to know what to read, Proof of Life by J.A. Jantz, you definitely have to get copies. And because it's October, you should start your Christmas and Hanukkah shopping now. So go on Amazon and start ordering as many of these books as you can. As a matter of fact, clean them out. They won't care. And buy the print copies because they're better. The one thing about me, J.A., is that I only reprint. And when I give this book to somebody this afternoon, because I promised I would, she's going to have trouble trying to figure out my underlines and my doodads and where it says huge and circled. So you know that when I read the book, I literally destroy it because that means I actually read it. So I want to thank you
right.
so much. This has been fantastic. You're great. Thank you. And you're going to be at the Thriller Fest next year because I get invited by Kimberly Howe and John Land every year. I'm their favorite media person. So I get to come, which is really fun.
Well, our travel plans for next year are currently in a state of flux. So we have kids and grandkids that we have to juggle. And so I'm not sure about Thriller Fest next year or not. But I think there's a good chance that I'll be there.
Well, if you are, this time I'll walk up and say hi.
Okay.
And I'm hoping to do this again. Thank you so much, everybody. It's sunny outside. It's only 60 here in New York, in Upper Westchester. I don't know how it is out in the Pacific, but it's like you're not in Las Vegas, right? Are you? You're not in Las Vegas.
No. I'm in Seattle.
Seattle, Washington. I'll tell you, it's so horrific. And once again, to those people out there, my heart goes out to you, and I truly hope that this never happens again to any country anywhere in the whole world, and that maybe we should realize that the people of Las Vegas are teaching us all a lesson on how to come together. Unfortunately, it's in a time of a horrific time, but they're showing that they came together and how so many people saved so many lives. And on that note, I want everybody to have a positive day. Thank you, J.A., and everyone have a great day. And if you don't know what to do, read a book. Bye.